Hi, I'm Valerie, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists give you an insider's look at the cosmetics industry. This is episode 334. I'm your host, Valerie George, and with me today is Perry Romanowski. Hi, Perry.
Hi, Valerie. Did you know that when you're out in Mexico and you're sitting by the pool and you're all shaded, that you can still get sunburn?
Oh my goodness, I do. Well, hopefully on today's show, we'll answer some questions that help you, such as ingredients that make body oils moisturize. Does body wash with retinol do anything? How does the OPI nail technology work, or does it? And what's the difference between cocoa betaine and cocamidopropyl betaine? But first, that inane chit-chat. So you're in Mexico and you're sunburned? How am I not surprised? Because you don't really wear sunscreen.
Well, I have to say, I'm not against wearing sunscreen. And I will put it on, though my wife buys the spray kind. And I'm a little skeptical that spray kind actually works. I don't know, but I put it on. But I guess you should probably reapply more frequently than I do. But mostly my sun strategy is this. I get by the pool, and then I put towels over myself, and I just sit completely covered.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm not covering my face except for the hat and the shade. But I guess the light must be able to bounce off of stuff and still get me, huh?
Yeah, it certainly does. I actually was in Greece one summer working at my church's camp, and I was in this white amphitheater that's present there for a very short amount of time. And I couldn't believe that under my chin was burned. I was burned in all kinds of weird places. And then I realized it's all the reflection that's coming off of all the environmental factors in the buildings and whatnot reflecting and coming up on me, and I got burned. So yeah, I totally get it. You said you probably don't reapply as often as you should. How often do you reapply?
I didn't reapply. I mean, I put some on, like, you know.
So really you should have left out as often as I should and just said I don't reapply.
Well, that's the same, isn't it?
Samesies.
While people can take my beauty chemistry advice, don't take my beauty use advice.
That's what I always say about me when I'm talking about hair. I say, look, I can speak about it from a chemistry perspective. Do not contact me with actual, like, color problems.
Right. Because I don't color. Well, what have you been up to, Valerie?
Well, as everyone knows, I was at a soap show, the Handcrafted Soap and Cosmetics Guild. Lovely show, lovely people, and had some car problems coming back. So I'm going to go back to the Rockies and pick my car up. The parts were on back order, of course.
Oh, no.
So we're going to make a fun weekend out of it, I guess, and just road trip back to LA. But other than that, I've just been very busy at work. I've not been having a great time. Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. That's what it feels like. But, you know, I will say the last few weeks have been really hectic, and it's like, man, can I catch a break?
You know what I blame everything on?
What?
The Big Bang. You see, it's everything that happens in the universe is a result of the initial conditions of the Big Bang, and then all the particles just follow the laws of physics, and everything that happens was already written 13.87 billion years ago. But that works for me anyway.
Well, all I know is, you know, I'm looking forward to catching a little break one day. That would be nice.
Well, hopefully you do. And hopefully we get a chance to talk about some of these beauty science stories.
Yeah, let's head over to Beauty Science News. What did you see this week on the sands of Cabo?
Yeah, but you know, I'm scanning my feeds as I sit on the beach, burning myself to a crisp because apparently I don't reapply enough. But anyway, I saw that Washington State in the United States now has the nation's strongest laws against toxic cosmetics. The legislation targets harmful chemicals that are often found in products marketed to women of color. According to this new legislation, which doesn't seem like anything new, but starting in 2025, the Toxic-Free Cosmetic Act is going to ban the manufacture, sale, and distribution of cosmetics containing 9 chemicals and chemical classes. They're looking to ban formaldehyde, lead, orthophthalates, mercury, methylene glycol, triclosan, and the polyfluoroalkyl substance, or PFAS. And of course, it says you can't intentionally add that. So it's not, this isn't like it's banning lead from lipstick. You can still have lead in your lipstick. You just can't
intentionally
add lead. Add it. Yeah, which nobody ever does anyway. So okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what this is actually helping. And to tell you the truth, the FDA is implementing some new MOCRA rules at the end of 24. So it'll probably trump any of these rules anyway. So I don't know. What do you think of these new rules here?
Well, the FDA, which already dictates that cosmetics must be safe, and the Cosmetic Ingredient Review Board already is very thorough in providing ingredient safety assessments for products, have already provided guidelines on the safe ways to use ingredients. There's already restrictions for the amount of lead that can be in cosmetics. So, I think this law is to just really set a precedent for states at the state level to try to make cosmetics safer. And I'll put that in air quotes. I know that this is not the only state law that's being put in action. There's a lot of different state laws, and that's really problematic as a brand because you have all these different rules that are coming into play. And my problem with this is they're just putting together a list that they found somewhere. They're in this law. There's not really a rhyme or reason why these products are being added, how they were substantiated to be harmful. There's no process. And so for me, that's the scary part, is how can you say something is restricted without outlining the process in which you've identified that to be the case.
Yeah, and it also seems like the theater of safety, where they're banning stuff that pretty much nobody's using anymore, right? I mean, nobody's putting formaldehyde in their products or lead in their products on purpose. Mercury is already banned in cosmetics. And triclosan, that was also recently banned too. So, this just seems like theater of safety or something. It's not really going to have much impact.
No, I don't think so. Hopefully the FDA puts together some language as they implement the new MOCRA laws that prevents the states from going a bit rogue and creating too many of their own rules that would violate the good things that the FDA is trying to do moving forward.
Yeah, you know what I think would happen is that if this got too cumbersome for a manufacturer in the United States, they would just sue the state of Washington. And ultimately, I think the FDA trumps what everyone's doing. So if something's more strict than the FDA wants to allow, then they'll just throw out the law.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, we were also sent one story sent into us by a listener. Animal testing for makeup ingredients allowed, as seen on the BBC. Did you see that?
This is an interesting story, and they talk about some of the loopholes that we spoke about back in episode 330.
Yeah, we did. So basically, in the early 2000s, for the purpose of testing ingredients on animals for safety in cosmetics, that's been banned. But there's another agency called the European Chemical Agency that oversees how chemicals are generally regulated, not just specifically in relationship to cosmetics, has said that some companies need to test certain ingredients on animals to ensure they're safe for the workers manufacturing the ingredients.
Yeah, they said that this types of testing, it could actually include testing chemicals that are commonly found in foundations and concealers, and by forcing rats to inhale or ingest them.
Yeah, I mean, I've encountered this a little bit, basically where an ingredient company is, we haven't tested animals in a long time, but then the ECHA comes along and says, actually, you do need to conduct some testing on this ingredient for safety, not for use in cosmetics per se. And then we've not been able to use the ingredient because they recently tested on animals for the safety of their workers. And it's really hard because on one hand you have this cosmetics regulation, and then on the other hand you have this chemical agency in Europe, and they don't really talk to each other, and that's a big problem. Well, they do talk to each other. They probably can't agree.
Right. So, but I'm curious, because we did have a listener, Vivianne. She was responding to what we said in episode 330. She said that if you do test an ingredient on animals, you're not allowed to use that data in a safety assessment. So unless there's already existing data about the safety of it, that testing that they do on animals means you can't use the chemical in a cosmetic product.
Yeah, I do know it is problematic, and it's creating a lot of confusion about whether people can use an ingredient or not. I think ultimately it's up to the raw material company to disclose the reason in which they did the animal testing, because at the end of the day, the legislation says you can't use animal testing for cosmetic products.
Right.
You can't conduct animal testing for cosmetic products. And so, you know, I think it's all in the letter of the law, not necessarily the spirit of the law in this case. And so a lawyer could argue, well, the testing wasn't done for cosmetic purposes. It was done for safety of workers, right?
Yeah.
And the data exists. Therefore, you can't undo the existence of the data because the testing wasn't done for that. And so one could argue that it may be exempt from a cosmetic testing ban. So I'm not a lawyer. I could easily see how this could be argued. And it's really a tough conundrum.
It really is. They're going to have to clarify these rules. The people at the Cruelty Free International Group, they are responsible for the Leaping Bunny Seal of Approval. They've taken some objection to this, as has some of the big brands, Unilever, Body Shop, Boots, because it does kind of murky up the waters about what's acceptable for testing and what kind of testing has to be done. So hopefully that gets worked out shortly.
Exactly. Well, let's head over to our beauty questions. Our first one is an audio question from Hillary.
Hi, Beauty Brains. Absolutely love the show, as I know so many of us do. I have a question about body oils for you today. I know that since it's an oil, it can't be actually moisturizing my skin, but I found that using a body oil on my skin, especially where I have a large sleeve tattoo, makes the skin look supple and look moisturized. I think I could maybe use the word it conditions the skin. But my question is, what should be the main ingredient that I look for that's actually good for my skin and will promote this good condition? There were a lot of main ingredients when I was shopping for a body oil, and I wasn't too sure which was the best for my actual body. Additionally, a lot of these say that you can use them on your hair and face. Are there certain main ingredients that are less likely to be comedogenic and clog pores and not clog pores? I'm just looking for some guidance as to, in general, shopping for body oils that will leave my skin looking and feeling as nice as I would like it to. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for that, Hillary. Valerie, body oils and moisturization.
Yeah.
Moisturization is one of those words that's, it means a little bit different stuff to different people, but it's sort of a market, and that's what happens with marketing terms like moisturization or even conditioning, right?
Yeah, I think it's all about consumer perception. If your skin is not dry and flaky and it looks supple, maybe there's a slight glow to it, it feels really soft, you might say, wow, my skin is moisturized, and it doesn't matter how you got there, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. And so usually when we refer to moisturizing, at least when I'm talking about it, a moisturizer has got to have three components to it. It's going to have an occlusive agent, an emollient agent, and a humectant. Now, the humectant is in there to kind of draw water to the surface, draw moisture to the surface. Now, that can come from the atmosphere or comes from deeper in your skin, but these are just molecules that hold on to water, your glycerins and your hyaluronic acids. The occlusive agents are things like petrolatum, which essentially creates a barrier at the surface of your skin, and that prevents moisture from leaving the body. And so as the moisture migrates to the surface of your skin, it sort of is trapped there. And that's really, when I talk about moisturizing, or when I think about moisturizing, that's what moisturizing means to me. The emollient piece and body oils are what I would consider emollients. They can block some moisture loss, but mainly what they do is they can make the skin feel and feel more flexible, look shinier, and just overall feel better.
I think it's that combination of action with the fact that it can help a little bit with transepidermal water loss, depending on the emollient that's present, is what people perceive body oils to be doing when it comes to moisturization. So I think that may be what Hillary's experiencing.
Yeah. And so as far as things go, are there things that people should be looking for in a body oil that is going to be good for skin and for moisturizing?
Well, I think in terms of the emolliency that is there, any ingredient really will be good. I think the thing to focus on is the texture of the oil. Does it seep into your skin? Is it drier feeling? Is it greasier feeling? I think the texture and way that it interacts and lays on your skin is probably the most important thing. Some body oils can be based on grapeseed oil or almond oil, which are really lightweight oils that go right into skin. But of course, they'll have other oils added to them to help with either the marketing story or enhance the texture of it. I actually really am enjoying milk thistle seed oil lately. It's a very dry oil that just gets sucked right into skin. But I like it because I can put it on my legs and then I can put something else on it or roll around in my sheets and not, you know, feel like I've gotten everything really greasy. But again, it's a personal preference. Some people may look at that and say, wow, it's too dry. I really love the feeling of coconut oil all over my legs. And in that opinion, it may be a perfectly acceptable body oil, but to me personally, you know, that's not for me. So I think it comes down to preference.
Yeah, actually, you know, I remember raw material suppliers would bring in all these different kind of emollients, and then they'd have me try the emollients on the back of my hand and say, oh, don't you like how that feels and that feels? And I'm like, they all kind of felt the same to me. So I was not the greatest emollient evaluator.
Yeah, I love them because, you know, some of them have different wetnesses and spreading to them. Some of them have different amounts of cushion, which is like the space between the fingers and your arm, let's say, if you were rubbing it on your arm. So you just have to really feel it and say, what do I like the feel of? So unfortunately, I think there's not a one-size-fits-all, Hillary. You may have to do some experimentation. But what about using them on hair and face, Perry? Do you have any opinions on that?
Sure. That was the other part of this question. As far as ingredients being comedogenic, generally it's thought that you shouldn't be using coconut oil on your face. Another one that you want to avoid is olive oil. Having said that, some people are perfectly fine with coconut oil and, you know, olive oil. And there's no magic oil that is going to be bad for everybody. There's some oils that might be worse for more people, but this is one of those experimental things, I think.
Exactly. I will say that I tend to think that face oils and hair oils should be separate. Again, it probably comes down to preference, but oils for skin, I think, should be really high in linoleic and linolenic acids. I think they are nice and dry, they're silky, they leave skin feeling really soft, but I don't think they feel so great on hair. Conversely, on hair, I think oils high in oleic acid are really great for hair. And so an example would be a marula oil or a broccoli seed oil. They just really love to be on the hair, in the hair, and so those probably would be better options, but perhaps you might find them too greasy for skin. But again, down to experimentation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Our next question is also an audio question coming to us from Pia.
Pia has been one of our patrons, so thank you so much for that, Pia. And here's the question about body wash.
Hello, Beauty Brains. This is Pia calling from Queens, New York. I'd like to start my message to you with some thank yous. Last time I called, Valerie recommended some products for sensitive skin, and I just want you guys to know that I still use them, and they were great recommendations that worked really well for me. My other thank you is just a general thank you for the podcast, because I feel that I'm a much more and better informed consumer thanks to you guys. And I'm a teacher, so I appreciate learning about products from you, but also learning about chemistry again, which I haven't really revisited since my high school days. And so you guys have really been great guides in that sense. I really felt like I was in this, you know, dark tunnel of product information before I discovered your podcast, and then someone turned on a light, and that was your podcast. And it helped me really try to discern through all this information in a much better way, and also save some money. So having said all that, I do have a question. I recently started using this new body wash. It's the Olay Retinol Body Wash, and I'm probably going to continue using it anyway because I really like the way it smells and the way it feels. But I'm wondering if it really makes a difference whether a body wash has retinol in it, since it's going to get washed away. And I know with shampoos, you know, you guys have mentioned that it's better to have to spend money on a conditioner than a shampoo, since the shampoo just gets rinsed off. So I'm guessing it's the same thing with body wash, but I'm not sure. And I was just curious if the retinol would make any difference whatsoever or not. Thanks again for all you do, and keep up the good work. Bye.
Well, the good folks over at Olay have launched a body wash with retinol. You know, it's interesting to me. She said she loves the body wash and doesn't want to stop using it. But she just wonders if retinol, does that make any difference? And it doesn't surprise me. P&G makes some pretty good formulas overall. They do a lot of consumer testing, and so they're making products that a lot of people are going to like. Now, that doesn't mean they're the only ones who can make good formulas, but generally something out of P&G, most people are going to like it.
In fact, this Olay Retinol Body Wash is popular amongst the cosmetic chemist influencers on Instagram.
Now, that has nothing to do with them getting paid to be to be influencers, right? I don't know.
I don't know anything about that. I don't want to I don't want to comment. I'm not affiliated with that, but I do know that some people do post about it. Perhaps they were affiliate posts. I didn't look into that. But Perry, we did actually cover this kind of on episode 275 when someone said, "Hey, Olay launched a bunch of body washes with different skincare actives, not just the retinol one, but a bunch of them." And we talked about it a little bit there. But in general, we had a consensus of an opinion. Do you recall?
I don't think our opinion has changed, but it's pretty much these things just wash away, and it's more of a marketing story than something that's going to provide a real benefit.
Yeah, so I would say if you love this body wash, love it for the washing, the retinol probably isn't going to do a whole lot.
It is an interesting question, though, like how much time should an ingredient be exposed on your skin to have an impact? It seems to me something like a retinol, it takes some time to have the reaction with the outer layer of the skin. And so the time of exposure that you get from a body wash is you put it on and then you rinse it off pretty much right away. That's just not enough time to have any real impact. And it's certainly not enough time to have the maximum impact that you'd get if it was a leave-on product.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess it depends where in the skin doesn't have to go. So you're absolutely right. Retinol actually needs to pass through the layer of dead skin on your outer surface called the stratum corneum. It's all dead. And you want it to get past that because it's actually an active molecule that gets converted eventually. A portion of it gets converted into retinoic acid, which is the active portion. And it can't do that on the top layer of your skin. However, I guess, depending on the hyaluronic acid, which is another one of the Olay body washes, do you think that could have an impact? Because that's kind of a topical.
Again, that these things, it's in the context of a lot of surfactants there. And it just seems like these things get washed off, right?
Yeah.
if the body wash part is working, it should be washing all that off. So, no, yeah. I mean, it's not, it's certainly not the most efficient way. And this is always the problem with like a moisturizing shampoo. The ingredients, unless there's a way for it to stay behind, it gets rinsed away. So generally, an oil does not work well from a shampoo because shampoos are designed to remove oil. So that doesn't work. The things that do work are like cationic surfactant or cationic polymers that will stick to the hair because through like an isoelectric chemical reaction to the hair. So there's a mechanism, but there's no real mechanism to me how something like a hyaluronic acid or even this retinol would work when delivered from a body wash.
Well, there you have it, Pia. Keep using the body wash if you love it.
Yeah, just don't expect the retinol to do anything. All right, we got a non-audio question. This comes to us from Amanda, who is one of our patrons. Thank you so much, Amanda. And in fact, if you want to help support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level. Your questions get a higher priority, and we answer them more quickly. So here's the question from Amanda. She says, "Hi, Perry and Valerie. My nails have a tendency towards peeling, so I'm really excited for a new product from OPI that launched this week called the Nail Repair Mode using patented Ultiplex technology, trademark." And she gives us the link there. The product description claims the breakthrough bond-building nail serum. Oh, my God. Bond-building? Okay. Breakthrough bond-building nail serum.
But for the keratin on the nails.
Completely reprograms your nails, resulting in 99% nail keratin repair. Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Reprograms. Really? Oh, my gosh. Mic drop. That website actually says mic drop.
Oh, my. Well, she continues. It says, "Nails look improved after the first application, and with continued use, you can expect smoother, stronger nails that are resistant to breakage and an improved appearance of ridges and color." Yeah, the same thing happens if you do nothing. But okay, no, it's repair like never before. And then, of course, there's the when used as directed. And so her question is two questions. Could you explain how this technology works, and do you think it can provide the benefits that it's claimed? Does the claim of 99% nail keratin repair actually mean anything? Well, fascinating question.
I would like to say that this works by clicking Control-Alt-Delete. I'm just kidding. That's what the website says.
Yes.
It's too bad most millennials actually probably have Macs. I don't know the statistics, but it feels that way.
Sure.
And so Control-Alt-Delete doesn't work. And if you're not sure what that's referencing, if you have a Windows computer and things are not working, you go into repair mode, which is what OPI has trademarked as well, and you hit Control-Alt-Delete on your computer and it gets you there. So, you know, I have to say the marketing on this is super good. I don't know if anyone at OPI is listening. Their OPI is in Calabasas here right near me. But this is pretty clever, and they're playing on bond building technology, which we know is prevalent in hair care.
It's all the rage in the industry, and so they said, "Hey, bond building is working in hair. I think people will believe in bond building for skin for nails."
Yeah. So, what do you think? How's it working?
Well, I'm not really certain how it works, but I'm looking at the ingredients here, and so it's a pretty simple formula. It's got alcohol, water, then it's got malic acid and 1,6-hexanediamine. Okay, I think we've talked about malic acid before, huh?
We have maleic acid. It's a similar chemistry to what the Olaplex molecule is based off of, but this is the key, and this is actually why the listener also asked about the patent and the patent assignment, why it's assigned to Wella, yet OPI is owned by Coty. And this also goes into a bit into parent companies and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, interesting.
This technology is actually the same technology, maleic acid, is the same technology that Wella used in their bond builder chemistry. And they have alleged that when maleic acid is combined with 1,6-hexanediamine, it actually helps aid in nail hardening. And so if Wella has worked on this, I believe that they've actually done the research behind it, and it's probably pretty good. So here they've taken something that works in hair chemistry to help bond building and keratin for hair. And they've said, does this work in nails? And they found this combination that works. So I would say the chemistry probably is kind of real or pretty real.
Well, it actually has the potential to work. So.
Yeah. And why it's owned by OPI is using this technology. Well, Wella is a hair company. They were actually bought by Coty from Procter & Gamble quite a bit of long time ago, and they still have some pretty significant interest in it. And OPI is also owned by Coty. So I think that they are sharing some technology across the parental ownership of the organization.
Yeah, that's probably it. Now, as far as things go here, though, these claims here, does the 99% nail keratin repair actually mean anything? To me, it does not. I don't think it really means anything. It's not like, I think what it's meant to mean to consumers is that your nails are going to be like they were before they got damaged. And that's just not going to happen.
Well, to the little asterisk that's next to 99% nail keratin repair, it has to be in comparison to something, right? So I would be interested to know how they tested this and what they tested it against. Because if it's when used compared to nothing and you're damaging the nails, for sure you're going to see some benefit from applying this treatment to the nail bed. Also, they just leave it at when used as directed. Well, what does that mean? They haven't really disclosed the methodology here. So when used as directed, other than the how to use, applying one layer twice a day on bare nails and, even do it before bed, it's really hard to say, okay, well, what's that 99% benchmark against?
Right. What does it even actually mean? It can mean whatever they want, I guess.
Yeah. But I will say, having been trained in hair color by Wella scientists, if it's run like the old Wella, it could be the real deal and it couldn't hurt to use it. I don't think it hurts, but definitely it couldn't hurt.
They definitely had the scientists working on it. If they're from Wella, because that was owned by P&G and they put research behind it. This just feels to me like the marketing group had a technology that they wanted to say, hey, it keratin's in nails and it works in hair, and so let's just put it on nails. I don't know. I've just been on projects where we've done stuff like that, so I don't know. That's usually
how it happens, and you try to rein marketing in, and then they say, well, I want to say as much as I can, alt control delete, mic drop, etc.
I think you raise a very good point there. That who's going to know what alt control delete means? I mean, are they selling? They must be selling to like the 40 and 50 something crowd. Like, I know what it means, but nobody uses that anymore.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
All right.
Well, we have time for one more question. Then Perry has to continue his vacation. It comes from Frank. Frank says, "Hello, Perry and Valerie. Are cocoa betaine and cocamidopropyl betaine the same? I found a blog from a chemist with some cosmetic knowledge who had an incorrect structure for years before finally correcting it. That alleges that these
little,
are
two. That's a little snarky. Yeah.
I love the shade. That alleges that these are two different species. Searching online, I found many sources that use them synonymously. Is the imidapropyl slightly longer with the same cocoyl alkyl chain?"
Well, that's a very good question, Frank. And I will point out that the chemist is Amanda, who writes for a blog called Realize Beauty. She's a real deal. She's a real deal. I actually I know her, and we've done a Q&A on my other website, chemistcorner.com. Despite the the incorrect structure, which, that can happen with people, and it has been corrected, she does know what she's talking about. So let's talk about that. Cocamidopropyl betaine and cocoa betaine, sometimes they are talked about, at least in like the DIY formulating areas, they're talked about as the same ingredient. They aren't
wrong.
The same ingredient. Right.
They're wrong to do that. Yeah.
That is wrong.
They are two different chemicals.
They are different ingredients, yeah. Exactly.
They're two different chemicals. They have two different CAS registration numbers. A CAS registration number is basically a social security number for a chemical. And so if you're ever, you know, hey, is this the same thing as this? Google CAS number and the ingredient you're looking for, and then Google the other ingredient and its CAS number. And if they have different CAS registration numbers, they are probably different.
Now, as far as what you use them for, well, in that way, they're very similar. They're both surfactants. They're both derived from coconut oil. And they're generally used in shampoos or body washes to help with foaming.
Yeah, and so while they're both amphoteric surfactants, they do have a slightly different chemical structure. Online, you'll see that people say, well, the cocoa betaine one is more natural, comes from plant sources. Well, cocamidopropyl betaine also comes from plant sources. It's typically derived from coconut oil, and then it's reacted, but they have different groups attached to the molecules, which makes them different in terms of CAS numbers. So it's not that the exact same and one is more natural than the other. They're two different chemicals. And I hate it when people use the terms interchangeably, especially reputable chemical companies online.
Right. Well, the big difference is that amidopropyl part. So the amid means there's an amide group, which is a nitrogen with some hydrogens on it and or methyl groups. And then the propyl is a little three carbon group. So there's that. And so that's stuck in the middle of the molecule. The cocamidopropyl betaine has that. The cocoa betaine does not have that. Otherwise, they're very similar. They work very similarly. There is one objection I have, though. People say, oh, the cocoa betaine is more natural. I mean, it's not. Cocoa betaine is not found in nature. You have to do some chemistry to make this into a molecule. So it's not like it's, you know, you go to the plant and you squeeze out cocoa betaine. No, that does not happen.
That'd be pretty cool, huh?
It's synthetic chemistry. Yeah. That would be cool. But so when I see this, oh, cocoa betaine is the natural surfactant, I'm like, nah, is it really? I don't know. You need synthetic chemistry to make it. But it is looked at as more natural anyway.
Oh, good.
Well, I hope that answers it, Frank.
Yes. Wait, is this the same Frank who had the question we ignored like a really long time ago about caffeine and under eye creams, and then we finally got back to him and the product had been discontinued? Do you remember that?
You know, there are more people in the world named Frank, but I think that might be the same one.
All right.
So there you go, Frank. You got two questions answered.
Well, we are out of time, everyone. Next week, Superfan Timothy is going to have a pretty mega question for us. It's going to be really good,
right?
But we're going to hang on to that for next week. So thanks for listening, everyone. I hear the music.
That's right. We apologize, Timothy, but we'll get your question next week.
If you get a chance, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And if you have a question and you want to hear your voice, just record it on your smartphone and email to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. As you heard a couple of audio questions today, we love the audio questions.
Also, don't forget to follow us on Patreon. This is an ad-free program, and I've been listening to some true crime podcasts recently, and it's been really annoying having to forward through the ads that have really weird timings, like 37 seconds and that kind of stuff. So if you want to support the show, keep it ad-free, help us cover some of our basic expenses, please head over to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level. We're very appreciative of it.
Also, if you want to follow us on our various social media accounts, which we will be more active on, maybe, I don't know.
One day.
On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have a Facebook page, and we're squatting on our TikTok.
Well, thanks again, everyone, for listening. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens.